and welcome to Minor Rex. I'm Charlie. I'm here as usual with Joel, and joining us for the first time on this podcast, we have Lori. Thanks for joining us, Lori.
Thank you for having me.
Regular listeners to this show will no doubt be aware that our good friend and regular host Dave, whose voice you've heard on pretty much every episode up until this point, is not joining us today. He has moved on from the Des Plaines Public Library. We're all very sad to see him go, and we'd like to thank him for the countless years that he's spent behind the microphone facilitating these conversations. We'll miss him terribly, and we'd like to thank him for his years of hard work.
Absolutely. Best wishes, Dave.
And like the last episode, we're still socially distancing and recording this remotely through Zoom. So it might sound a little bit different, but bear with us. We'll still try to give you the same great recommendations that we always do. So on today's episode, we will be talking about Bruce Springsteen, about his life, his music, his recent memoir, his recent Broadway show, you know, anything else that comes to mind about him. So if you're not a fan or you're not that familiar with him, I'll just give you a little background biographical information. He's a New Jersey native. He cut his teeth as a frontman in various bar bands along the Jersey Shore. At the end of shows, he was the guy who collected the money and distributed it to the rest of the band, which is how he got the nickname The Boss. After he started writing songs, he auditioned for the legendary John Hammond of Columbia Records, who had previously discovered Billie Holiday and Count Basie and Benny Goodman and Bob Dylan. And he got a record deal pretty much instantly. Like, this was in the early 70s when Bob Dylan wasn't really releasing much new music, and what he was releasing wasn't as ambitious as his earlier work, so there were a lot of new Dylans, or people that the press said, maybe he's the new Dylan, there was a lot of hype going on, and, you know, calling someone the new anything is impossible to live up to, even if you are like Leonard Cohen or Gordon Lightfoot or the late great John Prine. Bruce was called the new Dylan for a little bit, but he had something that the other singer-songwriters of the time didn't have, and that's a fantastic backing band, which he called the E Street Band. And the E Street Band was able to take Bruce's songs and give them color, fill in all the empty spaces, and add really unique musical embellishments, from Clarence Clemons and his raunchy saxophone to Danny Federici and his swirling organ and glockenspiel to little Steven Van Zandt's rockin' guitar solos and Max Weinberg's inexhaustible drumming. Like, that guy's a machine. Together, they made this spectacular live unit, and they got this reputation for epic live shows that lasted over 3 hours. He was basically unstoppable. He got the front cover on Newsweek and Time the same week in 1975. Now in 2020, he's a Rock and Roll Hall of Famer. He's one Emmy away from an EGOT. He's got the Tony and the Grammy and the Oscar, and, you know, he's the real deal. I myself am a fan, obviously, but it wasn't always so. I think that like when I was younger, I knew a couple songs. I knew the nickname The Boss. I had seen some pictures of a sweaty guy with big biceps, and I thought, yeah, he's just a one-dimensional macho meathead writing jock jams to play in sports arenas. But at some point, something snapped, something switched in my head, and I got it. Like the soaring melodies and the doubt and the longing in his lyrics, like the light and the shade in his arrangements. There's a lot of complexity and nuance to his music. So, long story short, I'm a fan. How about the rest of you? What are your experiences with the music of Bruce Springsteen?
The beginning for me was an eight-track of the River album. It was a double eight-track even, as it is a double album set. I was too young for Born to Run, but I had heard it many times on AM radio, which is all we knew at the time. And then in 1979, I started listening to an FM station called The Loop in Chicago, WLUP, and they played Springsteen, and they played the River album specifically, and that was it. I was hooked. I think the thing that appealed to me was not only the yearning in the albums, it was also a sense of place. And I'm not just talking about New Jersey, because obviously Bruce Springsteen is very connected to New Jersey as a sense of place, but he also connected with the place where working people lived. So I grew up in a small town in northern Illinois, and you went to school with the same people. You knew the same people. Everybody knew everybody. Everyone knew everyone's families. Everyone's dad worked at the factory. If their mom worked, it was at the school, or we all had the same sort of working class backgrounds. And I heard in Springsteen, the working class. I heard that voice for the first time in serious rock music.
Early in the morning, factory whistle blows, then rises from bed and puts on his clothes. Factory takes his hearing, factory gives him life. The working, just the working life.
Also, he talked about getting out of here. The working class, right?
Yeah.
You know, you're working hard, you're doing the right things every day, and it's rough, and you're still doing it, but wouldn't it be nice to get out of Dodge? And then Born to Run, obviously that anthem permeates all of his music. It's the, I can get out of here, I can leave this town behind, I can do better, be myself, and there's dignity in that. So that was my foray into Bruce.
I don't have anything as organic an entry to Bruce, but whenever I encountered him, it was in different facets of musical history. I mean, he was, you know, early 80s, mid 90s, post-millennium music. He's still, you know, a headliner. And I'm just fascinated by how can this man in this group, the E Street Band, like, how can they last for so long? And it just caused me to kind of scratch the surface and dig deeper. You know, then Charlie, you mentioned the anthem, the stadium rock. Mm-hmm. But there's that Born in the USA to me always hooks me. And it's just that pull of the music and then his just earnestness and his authenticity of his lyrics and the delivery really drew me. But then on YouTube, I would see these live performances and his albums were one thing, but performing these songs live, he transformed into this, as you mentioned, unstoppable force and the champion of the people, Lori, as you mentioned.
Yep,
and
exactly.
He provided songs about situations that people faced in real life. And he also provided just this pathos behind it. And I remember reading a book about how Stephen King writes his books on writing. And he mentions that writers, basically they practice telepathy. They mention something and now you're experiencing that as well. But Bruce takes that a step further. And he writes about something which is relatable to many, many different people. But he also captures the emotion behind what caused him to write that. And he transmits that through his music. And that, to me, I find extremely fascinating. You know, to see him in a concert singing Blood Brothers, and he's holding hands with this entire band and showing what that song is about. And you can see him wiping tears out of his eyes.
Well, we stood side by side, each one fighting for the other, and we swore until we died we'd always be blood brothers.
To me, that's the draw of Bruce. It's just he's someone you could just bump into on your way out of a store. He's not some exotic, glitzy rock and roll star. He's every man, like written large.
Yeah, I think you've hit on a lot of the central bits of his appeal. Like, he is definitely, you know, a dynamic live performer, but he's also really self-effacing and modest about himself. Like, a couple years ago, he did a one-man show on Broadway, telling stories, singing songs, and Netflix filmed it and put it up as an exclusive film last year. And towards the beginning, he sort of gets into that authenticity question. He sort of jokes around and says, I'm a huckster. I'm a fraud. I've never worked in a factory a day in my life. This residency is the first time I've ever worked 5 days in a row, and I don't like it. But, you know, he's still the voice of the working people. And I think that a lot of that is his upbringing. He's been very open about his relationship with his family, especially in that Springsteen on Broadway, where he does say his persona on stage is sort of how he saw his father, like this dynamic, energetic dude, even though he wasn't always that in real life. There's another really interesting anecdote in his biography that comes from, like, when he was just at the beginning of his career. It was his first show in London at the Hammersmith Odeon. And he comes to the venue. It's empty, except for there's posters on every seat that say, Bruce Springsteen, the next big thing, the savior of rock and roll. And he's like, no, I don't want people to see this hype as the first thing. So he goes around this empty arena, tears down every flyer he can find. And of course, by showtime, he's exhausted. He's pretty much wiped. And he thinks it's a terrible show. He's just in his own head. He's not losing himself in the music the way he usually does. And actually, that show came out as a DVD and CD years later. And it's maybe my favorite Springsteen performance. He's so good. It's just such a hungry performance of all the early stuff. And I can definitely see, like, anyone who saw that show is a fan for life.
Interesting. He talks about being a fraud. He might not have ever been a blue collar worker, but he is one of the hardest working people in rock and roll, period, bar none, full stop. First of all, he's a lifelong learner. He is a person who has read John Steinbeck. He reads poetry actively. He is always seeking, always looking for that next thing that makes him feel something, that next thing that motivates him to write something. As a lifelong learner and having those sorts of influences, he also, from the beginning, has worked the hardest ever in everything he does. And that's something, there's a quote I wanted to read from John Stewart, who had honored him at the Kennedy Center Honors in 2009. And John Stewart said, Bruce Springsteen is what would happen if Bob Dylan and James Brown had a baby. So I thought that was funny because Bruce's influences are vast and myriad, and he takes something from everything he hears. Frank Sinatra was a huge influence on Bruce Springsteen, which I found interesting. There are a number of Curtis Mayfield, Motown, The Animals, and Dylan as well, but all of those other things. Hank Williams, huge influence on him. The other thing John Stewart said is, whenever I see Bruce do anything, he empties the tank every time. And I think that is probably one of the other things that draws people so much to Bruce's live performances, because you know when you buy that ticket, you're going to have an experience. It's not just going to be, oh, we'll sit here and sing the songs and we know them all. It is transformative in ways that I have not experienced necessarily at other concerts. He considers the stage his church, and he calls what he does there testifying. He leaves it all on the field, every ounce of sweat and everything. It's all there. His live performances are otherworldly. I've only been to a few, but it is one of those things, if he does ever perform live again, I will be there. I did watch the Netflix as well. Matter of fact, I got Netflix so I could see that Broadway show, since I could not go to New York and see it in person. And I've seen a number of his live performances. They are wonderful to watch. And that show was fantastic, the Netflix. It really does give you a window into a lot of the things about Bruce Springsteen, because he has been on stage and in the public eye for 40 plus years, yet he is still a very private man. And one of the things for me as a Bruce fan, I have always appreciated that part, because for me, it's about the art. It's about the artistry. It's about the craft. It's about the fact that he dives so deep into his own craft that he has influenced so many musicians. So for me, it's been about that. I don't necessarily, until I read his autobiography, I had not read any books about Bruce Springsteen, because I always felt no one else could ever write a book about Bruce Springsteen that I would want to read. Personally, I wanted to hear it from his own mouth. I have, I don't know, 10 to 12 Springsteen CDs sitting next to me right now. This is how I know about Bruce Springsteen. He also calls what he does cataloging his time. So that he said that's what Dylan did so well, was he cataloged the times. And Bruce wanted to do that for the times that he lived in. And so while many of the stories have elements of Bruce Springsteen's own life in them. He is also cataloging the times we live in. Personally, one of my favorite Bruce Springsteen albums is The Rising for that very reason. It's the album he wrote post 9/11, and it contains some haunting melodies. It contains rejuvenation. It is a really deep dive into how people were feeling after that event. And it's one of my favorites for that reason. So he captures time and place and manages to do it so that everybody feels a part of it. So you didn't have to live in New York on 9/11 in this country to feel what happened at 9/11. And he captures that in The Rising. I just think it's a fantastic album. Again, it's one of my favorites for that reason.
My city of ruins, my city of ruins, come on, rise up, come on, rise up, come on, rise up.
Well, that's really important to contribute to the social memory. I'm a huge fan of Bob Dylan as well. And one of the things I love about him is that he brings to life a decade, particularly the 60s and early part of the 70s, that I never experienced. And I'm able to learn more about it through his music. And I got the same vibe from Bruce listening to some earlier albums and just the recordings of, you know, street racing and factory working. And I mean, even Glory Days, it's just kind of bringing back the past and reliving it through different eyes that you have in the future and seeing into the past.
I think you're right, Joel. And what I would say too is, you know, Bruce's time was post-Vietnam. He came just after Dylan, but with the post-Vietnam era and the civil rights era. Mm-hmm. And so he occupies a very special place. And you're right, those early recordings, well, he was a young man, so you're right. It was about, I mean, you listen to some of The River, and it's every song is about a car. You're like, mm-hmm. Wait a minute. Yeah. But he was a young man. It was cars and women and troubled relationships with women and sort of and The River itself, that song. So that album is sort of bleak in a way, but then you get Cadillac Ranch, which is just like a rockin' Sherry Darlin. I mean, those songs are
fun.
They're a lot of fun. Exactly right, Charlie. But yeah, it is that sort of snapshot of the time. And because Bruce has been so prolific throughout all these years, you get snapshot after snapshot after snapshot. So, and in a way, it tracks his life too. Another one of my favorite albums is Lucky Town from the 90s. He released Human Touch and Lucky Town at the same time and not too much critical acclaim. And the fans at the time, I don't think really understood it or went with it. They were not very popular albums at the time, but looking back, people did reevaluate. And Human Touch is good, but Lucky Town for me was a better album. It talks about hope and faith, and it talks about a time in Springsteen's life. That was a fairly autobiographical album where he was having children later in life, you know, for him at the time. He was in his 30s, married, having kids, and talks about faith and hope and what he hopes to pass on to them.
Left and said, baby, don't you understand? It takes a leap of faith.
Lucky Town itself, I think, was one of the better albums of that time. And then he didn't create for a while. So there was a spot there where there wasn't a lot coming out. But yeah, that's another one of my favorite Bruce albums.
Have you heard the new album that came out last year, Western Stars?
I have, yeah.
I'm a real fan of it. I think that a lot of the you mentioned the tension between dreaming big and working hard, like this kind of restlessness, the desire to escape that's there in Born to Run and Thunder Road and Rosalita. But I think Western Stars has a lot of that as well. You know, there's characters hitchhiking and jumping trains and driving fast and, you know, staying in moonlight motels. Like, it's still recognizably the same landscape, but the characters are older. Sometimes they're working over their regrets. Sometimes they have physical ailments. But, you know, they're all identifiably Springsteenian characters.
Yeah. It also sort of takes me back to when I think about the Hank Williams roots of his. Hmm. So it's interesting. He kind of couples, to me, country western with the soaring symphonies of some of his other work. Hmm. And so Western Stars, I hear Hank Williams in it. Mm-hmm. But I hear Phil Spector, too. He said, you know, Springsteen said, Phil Spector, that wall of sound, the symphony, as sound as its own language. I mean, that's another thing that is always present in Springsteen's music. And I'm hearing that in this as well, in Western Stars.
Our American brothers cross the line, bring the old ways with them. Do not go. Western stars are shining bright again.
Yeah, and I think that since he didn't work with the E Street Band on this album, it has different textures, different instrumentation.
Yes.
Yeah, there's the pedal steel guitar, and there's orchestration, there's vibraphones, you know, it sounds like an older record. It has kind of a Jimmy Webb or a Glenn Campbell kind of countrypolitan feel to it.
I agree. That is exactly how I felt when I listened to it as well. Yeah. I think for Springsteen, when he writes, again, he is bringing in all of those influences and everything else he's listening to at the time. And so when I mentioned he was a lifelong learner, always reading, always seeking, he regularly goes to small clubs to listen to live acts, to see what people are doing today. He is honestly and deeply interested in the craft and in music. He is immersed in it. He lives it. And so the first time I ever heard of Lady Gaga was because I read something Springsteen had written. And I went, Lady Gaga, I've never heard of that. And then I started listening to her. And of course, then she became ginormous. But that was well before she became the icon that she is. And he has influenced so many people, because the other thing he does is he is always happy to help out other musicians. He plays on every single charity, from No Nukes in the 80s to We Are the World. I mean, you can go down the line, Farm Aid, every single charitable music, Lollapalooza, he wasn't either involved in, instrumental in. He just did one for New Jersey a couple of weeks ago virtually. And it's the entire music community. Another part of his deep roots are Motown. And so he is often the person out there talking about African-American artists and how they were not recognized for the genius that they had. And a lot of their stuff was appropriated by white people and sort of taken and then made popular. So their ideas were mainstreamed, but sometimes they didn't get the credit for it. And that's one of the things he liked about Motown, was it put the folks doing the work front and center. But yeah, I love the way he loves other musicians. It's not competitive to him. It is community to him. Mm-hmm. I find that to be something that I think is very valuable.
Another thing that I really enjoy about him is, you've mentioned how prolific he is, but he's just as prolific in editing himself. Western Stars is his 19th album, and that sounds like a lot, but he's been at it for almost 50 years, so he could have had twice as many albums. And he's gone through the archives a couple times. There's been box sets of outtakes and the deluxe editions of the Darkness on the Edge of Town album and The River. Both came with just multiple discs of songs he didn't use, but recorded at the same time. And it's not like they're lesser songs or lesser recordings. They're just not what he was going for. Like, maybe he thought the lyrics were stated better in a different song, or He just didn't like something about him. I don't know, because when you listen to him, it sounds like he could have taken any 10 random songs from those and still had a hit out.
I tried to change. I got a job in sales. I bought a shirt uptown in Bloomingdale's and bought some flowers. And I went at your door and you came out. Didn't want to say me.
I think that's what makes him an interesting artist. It's not just what he does, it's what he doesn't do. Sort of towards the peak of his career, just before Born in the USA, he wrote a whole bunch of really dark, bleak character studies. Like you mentioned, Steinbeck and Flannery O'Connor. Like, all of that stuff was in these songs, which eventually came out as Nebraska. Like, he tried recording them with the E Street Band, but it just didn't work. So he just put out the cassette demos. And that's not what would have been played on the radio. That's not the path to a surefire hit album, but that's what the Muse told him to do, so that's what he did. And a lot of people say that Nebraska is his best album. It's definitely up there.
Well, I got a job and tried to put my money away, but I got debts that no honest man can pay. So I drew what I had from the Central Trust, and I bought us two tickets on that close city bus. Baby, everything dies, honey, that's a fact. And maybe everything that dies someday comes back. Put your makeup on, put your hair up, pretty, and with me tonight in Atlanta City.
Yeah, and I would say Western Stars reminds me of Nebraska too. It's interesting, Western Stars has more soaring symphonies and things like that, but there is an austerity to it that just reminds me very much of Nebraska as well.
Yeah, the characters in each of those album songs are desperate.
Yes.
There's a desperation in both of them.
Yeah. It goes beyond just the yearning, which you find in a lot of Springsteen. It's about the yearning. You're right. This yearning then moves into desperation. Yeah.
You're out of options at that point.
Yes.
When you get to Nebraska, you're out of options.
Yeah.
No offense if you're listening in Nebraska.
Exactly.
One of the things in his autobiography that sort of cemented my fandom, he's really remarkably forthright in the book about his struggles with depression and his father's struggles with depression. It's sort of surprising because he is such an uplifting live performer to hear him talk about the depths of despair and emptiness. Like, there's a quote from the book where he said, "I was crushed between 60 and 62, good for a year, and then out again from 63 to 64. You know, being open about that illness and the treatment, he's, you know, doing a really great deal to destigmatize those issues. Just him disclosing that gives that much more depth and context to his lyrics. If you take a song like Dancing in the Dark, which sounds for all the world like a goofy 80s synth pop song, maybe you immediately picture Bruce dancing like a dork in the music video with Courtney Cox. I know that's what I usually think of when I hear that song, but if you listen to the lyrics, like, that's a pretty stark depiction of a depressed mindset. Mm-hmm. It's a bored, restless, anxious, antsy, unmotivated, someone who hates his clothes, hair, and face. Knowing that's not a simple rhyme for the sake of a catchy song, it just raises the stakes and makes it that much more effective.
Messages keep getting clearer. Radio's on and I'm moving around my place. I check my look in the mirror. Wanna change my clothes, my hair. There's something happening somewhere. Baby, I just know you cares. You can't start a fire. You can't start a fire without a spark. This gun's for hire. Even if we're just dancing in the dark.
Yeah, and I would say, I think Born in the USA was misunderstood by so very many people.
Yeah.
If you listen to the lyrics, and this is one of the other things that just draws me to Springsteen, are the lyrics. I mean, I love the music, but the lyrics, we're all readers. Lyrics are everything. And so Born in the USA as a rock anthem, there is something about that that's, it feels like American exceptionalism, but then you listen to the lyrics and you hear the social criticism of the Vietnam War. And it's that juxtaposition sometimes that makes him, what appears simple is very complicated. It's that way with a lot of Springsteen music and lyrics. You're listening to a song, you're jamming along, and you're like, wait a minute, did he just say, you know, there are times where it feels like a rock anthem. And then when you listen to the lyrics themselves, there are those moments, like you said, in Dancing in the Dark, where you're like, wow, yeah, that's what he's talking about. I like the way he explained and described his musical life over all these decades. He says he is in a conversation with his audience, is how he describes it. And I really feel that as part of his audience, as a fan, as someone who's seen him live, who buys anything and everything that he puts out on CD. I feel like he is in conversation. I think that's a very interesting way to look at himself and his audience. It's a relationship, even though, like I said, I don't know much about his private life other than what he's written in that autobiography, but there is a conversation that's gone on over all these decades for me personally. At every point in my life, when Springsteen comes out with something, I am listening to it to see what time is he marking here. Mm. Where did he go with this? Is it rock? Is it folk? Is it country western? Is it a blend, which is what it usually is? But you can hear the strings from other years, from other albums. You hear a song, you're like, well, that reminds me of something I've heard 20 years ago, but now this is slightly different. Yeah, I feel like the reason he is still relevant is because he is still seeking and he is still trying every day to learn something new and to produce something. One of the other things he has said is one and one makes three when you put your imagination, your talent, and your creativity to work. You produce something brand new. And so I like that. That probably encapsulates his creative genius as well. And again, one of the hardest working musicians of all time, bar none. Yeah, he just never stops.
Born to run.
You got it.
I saw a quote that I think was from a studio producer or someone who said Bruce Springsteen has more lyrics in one of his songs than a lot of other groups do on an entire album.
That's great.
More words in his songs. And that's how prolific of a writer he is. It just comes flowing out of him.
And he has notebooks and notebooks and notebooks. If you bought CDs from Springsteen at any time, sometimes they appear in the liner notes, which he still has on everything. He puts lyrics in everything, which is, you know, the record album of way back. That was the beauty of a record album. You'd get it and you'd look who played on it. Mm-hmm. You'd look at the lyrics. Who was it produced by? Who did they thank? All that information was so important when you were listening to this music. I feel like he still creates albums. Mm-hmm. He's not creating singles. There's a theme from start to finish, and there's a flow, and there's a reason every song is put in any particular order. I think he takes great care in putting them together. At least that's the sense I've gotten. And if you are a musician out of that era, that's what everybody did. But I think Springsteen still does it to this day. When I listen to his albums, I can hear the flow that he is going for with song after song.
Yeah.
It's interesting you mentioned that because I'm more from the borderland of Bruce Springsteen dumb. You know, I'm still at the entry point, but I see a lot of similarities between Bruce's music and the way he delivers it. And dare I say, Jimmy Buffett and the way he delivers music.
Agree.
Just the focus on the bond between the artist and the fan, and how sometimes it feels like the music is written about that. Like you were mentioning before, furthering conversation with the fan. I get that impression from Jimmy Buffett through the progression of his albums and his concerts and stuff like that, where he reaches out. And, you know, obviously they have different, maybe depth. I don't know, but there's a certain similarity and a certain love of what they do. that really reminds me of one or the other between those two.
Yeah, Joel, you know, it's so funny you say that, because that is exactly what I was thinking today, was that one of the things about Bruce Springsteen is when you talk about him live, it's an experience. It's the same thing with Jimmy Buffett. If you go to a Jimmy Buffett concert, you are going to have an experience. Mm-hmm. And Jimmy Buffett is the same way in this other way as well, in that Jimmy Buffett works so hard to look like he's on stage in flip-flops, if he's wearing anything. Usually he's barefoot. I've seen him in concert a number of times as well. Again, Buffett makes working hard look easy. And I think Bruce Springsteen does the same. Mm-hmm. And I agree. I think there is a lot of similarity between the way they also approach music, because Jimmy Buffett is very collaborative and works with a lot of other acts and tries to help other acts get known and get heard. I agree with that. And I think, I'm not positive, but I think they might be similar in age. So I wonder if it's part of the ethos that they came out of. I don't know.
One of their career progression too.
Yeah. Again, sense of place too for Buffett. Mm-hmm. You know, it's that sort of beach island vibe, and sense of place is really strong, similar to Springsteen, where it's the working class.
Yep.
Yeah. And the other thing about Springsteen, you know, he writes about blue collar workers, but he also writes about people just down on their luck, underdogs, losers, quote unquote. So he also, I think, appeals to outsiders in a way, even though he is a rock star, incredibly wealthy, incredibly well-connected. I mean, some people might call him elite in a way. His special place for the underdog shows up in every album. It shows up in many of his songs. And it's funny because one of the things, you know, we see Springsteen, the Springsteen of today, or even the Springsteen of the 70s and 80s, you know, he seemed like a really kind of cool cat in the late 70s. And then, you know, in the 80s, obviously with Born in the USA, he was working out a ton. He, you know, looked like that macho guy that you were talking about, Charlie. And we've seen him kind of over the years, but there's a bit of that loser. He talks about himself that way, self-deprecating and sort of humble about that sort of thing. Even like Steven Van Zandt talked about it. He said, do you remember the grunge guys with the long hair staring down at their shoes? That was him. People were always wondering, why are you hanging out with him? He's such a weirdo. I mean, that is literally what people said to Steven Van Zandt. And what Steven Van Zandt figured out was Springsteen was so incredibly focused on his music that he didn't care what other people thought in that way. He was just focused on making it. Steven Van Zandt said Springsteen was an inspiration to him because of his dedication, and that Springsteen was the only other guy in the music business when they were coming up that never held another job. Everyone else had part-time gigs or full-time gigs and did music on the side to keep their stuff going. And he said Springsteen was so dedicated and so confident that he never had another job. So I thought that was interesting.
I have a question for both of you. You see a lot of Bruce with the E Street Band and Bruce without the E Street Band. Can either of you elucidate on what their relationship is with the E Street Band and why there's some with and some without during his career?
I do know that there was a time just before the Human Touch and Lucky Town albums that the E Street Band did break up temporarily. They did a couple of songs for a Greatest Hits album in the mid-90s, but they didn't do a full-length tour until 1999 again. So yeah, there were some times when the E Street Band was out of the picture and he was working with session musicians or other musicians. The Seeger Sessions is a very notable project without the E Street Band. I think that's a really great album, sort of forefronting the protest and the folk elements in his music.
Well, I wish I was Mr. Gates.
But yeah, I think that the E Street Band has such a unique sound to it. They bring so much to his songs that, you know, it's like Neil Young and Crazy Horse. He can work with someone else, but when you want the thing that only that group of people can provide, mm-hmm. there's no substitute for it.
And I would also say two of my favorite albums were actually made without the E Street Band. Mm. And don't get me wrong, I love the E Street Band. Magic is one of my favorites with them. I just love that album. But Tunnel of Love and Lucky Town, both were made with session musicians and Springsteen playing a bunch of the instruments himself. And part of it is, too, he maybe wanted to, as you said, the sound is so specific with E Street Band. And I think maybe he wanted a different sound and he wasn't finding it. And I think he also maybe wanted to disconnect from that sort of group feel. Hmm. He really wanted to get down to the nitty gritty in these. Lucky Town is a little more autobiographical than the other ones. Again, this is, he's married and having kids and sort of plugging into that in this particular record. And Tunnel of Love, I think he was exiting a marriage. Hmm. And so that one is also deeply personal. And I think that might have played into why he went sort of solo on those. Tell me what I see. I don't have a preference. I think it just depends on what mood I'm in.
Yeah, and that's the beauty of the versatility of his career. It's a spectrum of different things.
Yeah.
To me, that's one of the most incredible things. It's just he's been so relevant across, what, 5 decades. Are there any signs of slowing down? I mean, where does he go from here?
I don't see him slowing down. I think he loves live performance. He talked about it a little bit. He's like, it's transformative for him too when he's on that stage. He's all in it when he's on the stage. He's in the moment. He's present. When he's done, he's exhausted. I think he's avoided some of the physical things that other people have gone through. And again, this might be just because he's been able to keep this private, but you don't hear about needing knee surgeries or, I mean, Max Weinberg has had, I don't know, 8 surgeries on his shoulders and on his wrists and on his hands. But Springsteen, I think he had a neck surgery that was done through his throat, which was sort of scary. And he wrote about that in his book. But other than that, I don't know that he's paid a physical toll for that being on stage. And I think he gets as much out of a live performance or more than anybody in the audience. So unless COVID-19 shuts down live performances for a period of time, I think he was planning a 2020 tour, if I'm not mistaken, after the Broadway. I mean, Broadway, he did 5 shows a week from October of 2017 to December of 2018. 5 shows a week.
Yeah.
Not even James Brown did that.
That's amazing to me. I will also say, the River Tour that he did just a couple years back was supposed to be 20 dates, 2-0. By the end of it, it was 75. First of all, he kept selling out, so they would add another date. But that's the way he is. If there's a place to get on stage and transform, he's going to do it. So I really don't see him slowing down.
Yeah,
I think he's still going to continue to catalog his life and catalog the times and explore, because that's another thing. I look at him as an explorer. He's always trying on new hats too. I mean, this Western Stars, this is a departure from a lot of his other stuff in many ways. He taps more into the country roots. We haven't heard that in a really long time. So I don't see it, and I'm glad I don't see it, because that would make me very sad if Bruce Springsteen stopped making music.
Having him around to check in with us every once in a while, it's a feeling of constancy. Like, I know that since the shutdown, he's been doing shows for his Sirius XM channel. He recently did a show in an empty Fenway Park with the Dropkick Murphys, just as their guest star. I don't think that even being quarantined can keep him from the stage. And I don't think that retirement is in his vocabulary.
Yeah.
No. One of the performances I have seen of him, it's relatively recent and he's not a spring chicken. And I just remember being incredibly impressed with his fitness to, go sliding 20 feet across the stage or, on his knees doing a guitar thing or, just all the sheen of sweat on his body as he's performing. And I do notice that he did wrap his wrist for a few concerts I saw, and I wondered if that had to do with any kind of carpal tunnel with the guitar. But I mean, come on, like the guy, it just, like we said before, he just seems unstoppable.
Yeah, he does. And I also appreciate how he honors other musicians. He also performs other people's music all the time.
Yeah.
And I happened to trip over a website that had all of the covers he has done of other people's music live, not on his albums, but live. I mean, it was pages and pages and pages. So he not only writes prolifically, he honors other people's music all the time and brings up other musicians all the time. He will pop on stage. He did it with Gaslight Anthem. Went on stage with them. I think it was Glastonbury, maybe a few years ago. Just any opportunity to help someone get noticed, he's out there. He's all in. So I really appreciate that.
I mentioned Stephen King earlier, but he kind of reminds me of the Stephen King of, you know, rock and roll. I mean, Stephen King is a prolific author, and he's always touting new authors, and it might be something to deal with contracts for a publishing company, but you always see a Stephen King review on a book. He's always happy to do stuff and support other people. So it's another weird comparison.
No, I think it's valid. Like, they're both people who could rest on their laurels just based on the output that they've done, and they show no signs of slowing down.
Right. Always looking for something new.
Yeah, I did think of one of the things we had talked about earlier was about the relevance of Springsteen and how he was going to be the next Dylan. Mm-hmm. Everyone had him, and he refused that mantle. But one of the things he said about it was when he listened to people like Hank Williams, they would talk about real things, and there was a darkness to it and an austerity, and it was, we're stuck here, and this is all really bad. And what he said, it never answered for him, was why. And then he heard Dylan, and Dylan was asking, how does it feel? And so he said he kind of put all that together, and his music has always been about, why does my bucket have a hole in it? Hmm. You know, when he talks about, I work hard, I pay my bills, but I can't ever get ahead. So I thought that was interesting how he put it, because he said that was what, when he listened to Dylan and kind of Hank Williams, he's like, yeah, the why, and then how does it feel, and then why does my bucket have a hole in it? I thought that was a really good statement about many of his songs, because he wrote Working on a Dream after the financial crash in 2009, and he talks a lot about that, that, you know, you're trying to get ahead and you just keep getting crushed. So he also addresses some of the social issues of our times as well. Swing my hammer, my hands are rough from working on a dream. From working on a dream. I'm working on a dream. The trouble can feel like it's here to stay. I'm working on a dream. I love will chase the trouble.
And we do have many, if not all, of his songs on Freegal right here at the library.
Yes, we've got plenty of Bruce at the Des Plaines Public Library, like both on the shelves and our e-materials. Like, on the shelves in the building, we do have CDs of his albums, DVDs of documentaries and concert films. We've got books galore, biographies, autobiography, photo books, music books, collections of interviews, you name it. If you haven't tried our carryout service, you just log into your account at dppl.org, find the items you want to check out, place them on hold, and stop by the library to pick them up.
The only thing, Charlie, they're going to have to schedule. We're going to call them when the items are ready for pickup. But yeah, that's how it would work. They would put it on hold. We would call them when it's ready, and then they could come pick it up.
But if you'd prefer not to leave the house, we also do have a lot of e-materials. DPPL cardholders can use Overdrive to either read the memoir Born to Run as an e-book, or you can listen to Bruce himself read it as an e-audiobook, which I would definitely recommend because those stories are just that much more compelling coming out of his mouth. And yes, Freegal is a huge resource. You can find pretty much anything Bruce Springsteen. There's albums, singles, box sets, live albums, all available for unlimited streaming. And you can also download 5 tracks for free every week. Those are MP3 files, which are free of any restrictions, so you can burn them on CDs or play them on your phone or your iPod, if you still have a working iPod. And slowly but surely, you can compile your own Best of the Boss playlist. All right. Well, that'll do it for this episode of Minor Recs. Thank you all for listening, and we'll see you next time.